Hi, friend. When you started your business, did you wish that there was a handbook that told you what to do and what to look out for? Because I certainly did. I looked up everything I could on Google, but with so much information, I was often overwhelmed and I didn't know what to listen to or what to take action with. And so in this episode, while I don't have a handbook for you because everything in entrepreneurship is messy and it kind of always depends, I do have a very knowledgeable person who is going to share what to look out for after she has worked with hundreds, maybe even thousands of entrepreneurs. My guest today is a founder of a venture capital investment fund that works with startups as well as growth stage and mature companies. This means that she has worked with all different types of CEOs and founders. But after a recent conversation with one of her founders that she works with, she shared an Instagram reel about the 5 mistakes to look out for as a new entrepreneur. Immediately, I knew I had to have her on the podcast. And so these 5 mistakes are ones that everyone falls into. But after today, you're going to know what to look out for. And by looking out for them, you can prevent staying in these mistakes. And you're more likely to achieve your goals and stay focused on what you truly want in your business. This honest conversation is filled with us sharing personal examples, so you're sure not to feel alone in this journey. Plus, we ended up talking about a few topics that led us to actually recording a part 2 of this conversation. So stay tuned next week for part 2. But before we jump in and I hand the mic over to the guest, I want to tell you a little bit about her. Erica Lucas is the founder of Stitch Crew, which is an organization providing capital and resources to women and minority entrepreneurs. Erica is also the founder of Vest, an investment fund and peer network for women professionals. In this capacity, she invests in women-led companies supporting women, working parents, and inclusive employers. She also connects women professionals across industries, region, and career levels. Erica is a LinkedIn top voice on venture capital, entrepreneurship, and strategy. And she's on the board of directors of RVest, the Divergent Hub, and the Oklahoma City County Health Department as a member of the Latino Corporate Directors Association, Familia VC, and Latinx VC. Prior to Stitch Crew Invest, Erica was a partner at the private equity firm and global director at the Oklahoma Department of Commerce. As you can tell, she is a powerhouse, and I am fortunate to say that she is a mentor of mine and in my corner, both in the hard times and to celebrate the good times. She's always there to lift me up and let me know that tough times are part of the journey, but that I am not alone. And no doubt you're going to feel encouraged and seen by her words in this episode. So I won't make you wait any longer. Let's hear from Erica. This is the Unapologetic Entrepreneur Podcast, a podcast for passionate entrepreneurs just like yourself who are looking to create a profitable and productive business that you are proud of. On this show, we explore entrepreneurship success stories, but not just the highlights. We get into the nitty-gritty details so that you know more about the path traveled to achieve that success. See, I'm on a mission to help you never feel like a failure again when it comes to achieving your goals. And so much of that is setting realistic expectations of the effort needed, goals that align with the season of your life, and ensuring that you have the accountability in place that you need. So on this podcast, you can expect real conversations, practical tips, and lots of encouragement along the way so that you have everything you need to follow through and actually achieve your definition of success. So if you're ready to go from unsure to unapologetic, be sure to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. Thank you so much, Erica, for being here today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
I am so thrilled to share you with my audience. And I know I said it in the intro, but I am such a big fan of yours. And I'm just so, so thankful that you're in my corner. And you're in so many corners of women entrepreneurs very specifically. And I'm just really excited for more people to hear you from my audience's side of you, because you have such a wealth of knowledge. And I feel like I can tell you this all the time, and I'm just gushing about it, but you are such a wealth of knowledge and you never shy away from sharing it. And so I know we're talking about 5 myths and mistakes today, but thank you so much for sharing all of the content that you do with all of us entrepreneurs, because it really does help. And so I hope it helps you to hear that.
Thank you. It obviously makes me feel good. Although I would say, in all honesty, we're all trying to figure it out, right? Like we're all just learning every day. But thank you.
Yeah. And I appreciate, again, it's that honesty of you saying this. And it's so helpful to hear that. Anyone, no matter where they are in their entrepreneurship journey, it's you're figuring it out one step at a time. And I feel like so often we look at people and think they have it figured out. I am so guilty of this. And I think about this all the time when I see someone like yourself or other people that I follow on social or know personally, and I'm like, gosh, they've got it figured out. But we don't. We're just taking it one step at a time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I actually did a post on LinkedIn because I think LinkedIn is one of the most, I love LinkedIn, by the way, love posting there. I connected with a lot of great people there, but I think it's troublesome to compare ourselves to other people, particularly in that in all platforms, but particularly on that one, because if you think about it, LinkedIn is geared towards professional people, right? And so, and usually the audience there is going to be your boss, your peers, you know, your professional network. And so most of the time you're going to be posting about your wins, not necessarily your struggles or what you're learning or what you're not learning. So it's easy for us to see other people posting about their wins and all of that, but we really don't get the backstory as to how they got there. Right. So I do it too. It's easy to do. I think it's in our nature to see what other people are doing and have some admiration, but it's very easy to convert that admiration to, you know, this feeling of like, well, maybe I'm not on par, or maybe I need to be doing more. But yeah, we should just be improving ourselves, you know, and focusing on ourselves one day at a time.
Right. You know, I've never thought about that in terms of the different platforms and LinkedIn being the one where, especially if you're in a career where you have a boss who's following you on LinkedIn, that is a very different experience from posting on Instagram and sharing different things.
Yeah, it's the one platform where I get the most private DMs that would say, I love what you just said. I'm not going to like it because, you know, or for whatever reason, or I'm not going to comment, but thank you so much for saying that on private DMs more so than other platforms, I think, again, and I completely understand, you know, the why that is.
Oh, wow. That is so fascinating. Thank you for saying that. And I want everyone to hear that because I think, and I know what you're going to talk about is number one in the mistakes and myths that we're going to talk about, but we get caught up no matter what platform it is of the number of likes and the comments. And we think that that shows the whole story of that post or that experience. And it's really interesting because kind of like you with LinkedIn, I have that with email. More than anything else, I get so many replies more so to my emails than I do on Instagram or anything like that. And no one else sees that. So no one knows that part of my story. Yet I have so many personal conversations through emails when I send my weekly emails, which, by the way, if you've ever emailed me, thank you, because I love having those conversations and I don't want them to stop. They're so fun because probably just like you with the personal DMs on LinkedIn.
Yeah, 100%. It's feedback, right? And it's knowing that maybe you helped somebody, you know, who needed to hear whatever it was on that day. So,
yeah, it makes such a big difference. So we're going to talk about five myths and mistakes that new entrepreneurs make. But before we jump into those five, which we kind of alluded to one of them, I would love for you to share a little bit about your backstory so people understand where this is coming from, because I think it's a really fascinating part. I mentioned that you help and mentor and support and invest in entrepreneurs, but can you share a little bit more about that so that we have context for these mistakes?
Yeah. So first of all, I never thought I'd be an entrepreneur. My background is actually prior to Stitch to Invest was in economic development and private equity, but private equity, not with my firm, but working for another larger private equity, making investments exclusively in the aerospace and defense. And then, you know, I that job was actually, at the time, I didn't think so, but now I look back and I'm like, damn, that was really cushy. You know, like a cushy job. I had, you know, a really nice salary, well over six figures. You know, our bonuses included trips, paid trips to, you know, Mexico at some of the best resorts and stuff like that. But then I left that job and I came across the funding gap that exists for women and people of color, particularly when it comes to entrepreneurship. You know, it's one thing, it has become cheaper thanks to technology. and non-code tools to launch businesses, but it continues to be challenging to scale them if you don't have the resources, the network, and then, of course, the capital to grow those ideas and those businesses. So in 2017, late 2017, I launched StitchGrew with my husband, actually, Chris. He was an entrepreneur. He's a serial entrepreneur. He loves taking risks. That was in his nature. It wasn't on mine. But we launched StitchGrew, and fast forward, gosh, almost 6 years now, we've supported over 200 startups.
Wow.
We didn't necessarily started focus exclusively on women and people of color. But I would say now over 80% of those companies that we've supported have been women-led or minority-led. And then in 2020, because of the disproportionate effect the pandemic had on women in the workplace, you know, a lot of women leaving the workplace, a lot to do with caregiving, mm-hmm. non-paid giving, caregiving duties. You know, we wanted to do something about it. So about six of us women, professional women, got together and said, we need to do something about it. How do we create safe spaces to talk about it? And honestly, Vest started very organically and very like grassroots, not really thinking that it was going to become the social enterprise that it is now. But anyway, through Vest, we are a peer network of women professionals from C-suite to emerging leaders and also entrepreneurs. And then last year, we launched a $20 million fund, that's our target goal, to invest exclusively in women-led companies that are building, particularly to solve our care crisis and lack of infrastructure, and also back women-led companies that are helping employers build more inclusive workspaces.
Gosh, it's such a wonderful evolution, and thank you for walking us through that and like taking us through that timeline. It's so interesting to me how many people, and I'm so lucky that I get to talk to people like yourself on this podcast, and everyone that I have really talked to and that tends to gravitate towards my podcast, it become or talks about being an accidental entrepreneur. Like, I didn't want to be it. That was not the plan, but I stumbled into this thing. And that's who listens to this podcast. And so no matter what the story becomes, everyone seems to have this beginning part of like, I saw something that I wanted to do and to change. And that is such a beautiful thing. So everyone who's listening feels the same. They just had a different path for sure. So thank you for walking us all the way through that.
Oh, absolutely. And it's particularly true for women, right? Because workplaces were never designed with women in mind or with caregivers in mind, or honestly with any other people in mind. I'm very proud to always say that women are launching companies faster than our male peers, Latina 6 times faster. And I love that statistic, but I also know that a lot of the reason why, it's because they couldn't make it work at work.
Right.
Right. And so they were kind of forced out of the labor force, and therefore they launched businesses independently to try to bring in income in a way that's more flexible and that actually enables them to be a caregiver and to bring income to their household.
Right. I think about how I started my company, and I also started in 2017, which I didn't know we had the same year. And I was laid off. And after that layoff, you know, of course, my self-doubt and like all things were kicking hardcore because I was like, clearly I'm not good enough. Like I didn't make the cut. I was laid off, even though they say all the words like, it's not you, it's this and blah, blah, blah. I still felt it. But it was so interesting to me because I know not everyone in corporate has this experience, so I'm not trying to put all people in a box, but my personal experience was I had jobs where I was very, very micromanaged from many different people, and I was never allowed to work from home or had any flexibility. Like if I needed the plumber to come to my house, I had to take PTO, and it was like, shame on you for needing a plumber. And I feel really bad saying that because if my past bosses are thinking, oh my gosh, that's not what happened. It was how I felt though. Mm-hmm. And I always had that feeling. And so my number one driver was, I want to have time flexibility. And that's really, I wanted to work from home, which is comical now to say that. But in 2017, I asked to be able to work from home and I couldn't. And so you saying this, I did make that decision. And at that same time, I got married that year and I have 2 stepkids. So I became the taxi driver doing pickup and drop off. I mean, I volunteered for it, but because I was able to work from home, I then had that flexibility that I now look back on years later, both the kids are gone. And I think how sweet that was that I had that time in the car with them for those few years that they were here. And I was, you know, being able to be that taxi driver. And I think about how many people don't get to do that because they don't have that flexibility.
Well, it's sad, right? Because if we look at what happened in COVID, is I think a lot of employers did wake up to the fact that, hey, we need to be more flexible. Mm-hmm. And it was fantastic. But I post-COVID, I feel like a lot of employers are like, let's go back to business as usual. And the challenge is, particularly when it comes to women, working parents, and Gen Zs, there's no such a thing as going back to a system that really exists. It's outdated. It's just, right. You know, not just in, as a, I know we're not talking about this, but I get so passionate about it. That
I love it. Let's talk about it.
I created a fund to invest in companies that are enabling employers to do this because I don't think that we're ever going to go back to business as usual. And so we need employers to develop, systems that still lead to productivity and profitable businesses, but in a way that provides flexibility, not just in where we work, but when and how we work. And I think you're able, if you do those things in a way that's supportive of both sides, I think that we're going to see profitable businesses, but also engaged and productive employees.
Amen. I believe it wholeheartedly. And once I was able to start my own business, which has evolved over the years, I realized, oh my gosh, this is why so many people are trying to do this and they're struggling. And it's how I have a job now. I've created and evolved over time. But I want to support those people who want to do this too. Just like you, I'm just doing it in a different way of holding people accountable to what they want to do and staying focused, because it is a challenge when you're trying to manage all of these things and you're doing the pickup and the drop off and you're doing the meal prepping and you're doing all these things and your time feels so stretched that achieving the business goal, especially when you're bootstrapping it and doing it all on your own, trying to do as much before you can hire those contractors to take some things off your plate, it does feel like a lot and becomes really overwhelming. And like you said earlier, a lot of businesses end up fizzling out because it's just not manageable. And so I'm hoping to change that in my small way on this planet of being able to help entrepreneurs and really anyone who's trying to, you know, achieve a goal really is, you know, really understanding what that means for you, because so often, and again, like we're going to talk about, it's we think we have to do so much of what everyone else is doing, but if we can figure out, like, what does it mean for me? I don't have to have seven figures. Some people do, some people don't. I don't have to have whatever. It's understanding what you really need and then focusing your energy and your effort on that. It makes a huge difference, and I hope that more people can keep their business in a sustainable way and have that flexibility too.
100%.
Yeah. So let's dive into these five myths. So thank you for giving us the background, because what I really want people to hear is you have such a wealth of knowledge of working with so many different types of entrepreneurs in different stages. And so it's the person bootstrapping, it's the person looking for funding, it's all of this, and you've done it too. And you posted a reel, which I'll make sure to have in the show notes, on Instagram, which now I'm curious, did it make it to LinkedIn?
I can't remember if I posted it to LinkedIn. Probably. I try not to post. I can't remember.
Yeah, I'll have to go see if it's on LinkedIn too. But I saw it on Instagram and immediately was like, oh my gosh, I need Erica on the podcast because these are perfect. So you talked about five myths and or mistakes that new entrepreneurs make. So I'm going to let you dive in and talk about these five because they're so, so powerful.
Yeah. And by the way, I am not like a professional content creator or, you know, anyway, I say this because I want to make sure that these are not like must do this. These are things that I learn on my own,
mm-hmm, right?
Like being an entrepreneur, you know, or through helping, you know, all the companies that we've helped through Stitch to Invest. So I just want to, you know, say that very clearly.
Well, you create great content I am like, I swear I'm one of your biggest fans on Instagram. I probably comment on everything because it's so powerful. You know, I heard something and I wish I could remember who said this. I think it was Adam Grant. I'm pretty sure it was Adam Grant on the Huberman Lab podcast. I'll see if I can find it and link it in the show notes. And he said something and he said, what I try to do on social media is think, if someone only saw this one post, would it represent the person who I am? Would it give them an accurate representation? And I've thought about that ever since I heard it. It's been a while since I heard it. And you are one of those people that your content is so powerful. And so as much as I know, I don't know your whole story or know you intimately or anything, but as much as I know about you, you really represent yourself in a very authentic and true way. And so you saying like, I'm not a professional content creator. Like I really appreciate that. But in my opinion, the content that people resonate with, which is why I love it so much, is authentic and true to you. And that's what you create. So in my mind, you're a great content creator.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. Yeah. So going back to the five things, what made me think of this is I was actually talking to an entrepreneur that we've supported through the Stitch Group program that was actually thinking about shutting business her business down. And, you know, we don't talk about that often, particularly in public spaces. When is it time to shut it off? You know, and we can talk about that in another podcast, but
Yeah. Oh my gosh. We have to have you back because everyone just said that. And I've never thought about this. So I'm going to invite you back. You're going to have to do it. We'll have to do a part two here.
Yeah.
Because people ask me that question all the time. Amanda, when is it time to just hang up the towel? Because I feel like I'm grinding it out and I don't know when to stop.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And
okay.
It could be toxic, right? It could be because of this hustle culture and all of this. Sometimes learning from, you know, in fact, I can't remember the actual statistic, but most of the time when you're an entrepreneur, most businesses will fail. Your first business will fail. But if you apply everything you've learned in your first business to your second business, I can't remember the percentage increase of likelihood that you will succeed. But, it's just a learning curve that we all
Gosh, have. Thank you for sharing that. I'm going to dig up the stats on that and figure it out because I went through a huge pivot last year. And I say pivot, but it really was shutting one down and starting another one. It's just all under the brand Amanda McKinney, so it didn't change names. But my husband there was a day last year where I'm just crying, I'm upset with everything, I feel like all things are bad. And he was like, Amanda, you keep saying you've pivoted your business, but you really shut one down and started another one, and you're really being mean to yourself about having your revenue be the same. And if you had shut one business down, like a business coaching business, and started a flower shop, you wouldn't have expected it to have the exact same revenue right away. But that's what you're putting on yourself. And I thought, oh my gosh. So hearing that, now I'm like, okay, so the first one, I don't like to say that it failed, but I purposefully shut one down to start another one.
Yeah, well, we'll do another podcast and talk about that.
Yes.
Okay, so back to the five things. Yeah, so I was talking to this entrepreneur and we were talking about it and, you know, we really just went through, you know, what did we learn from this business? And that's how those five things came in. But, you know, it was avoiding vanity metrics, which we talked a little bit about, you know, what are vanity metrics, spending money before making money. I think all entrepreneurs, including myself, make that mistake often. Staying in your comfort zone. One that's actually, I didn't necessarily put this in a particular order, but if I had to, I'd probably put this at the very top. And it would be attaching your personal identity or just your identity in general to that of your business. And we can have, again, a whole show just on identity. And then fear of missing out, which, by the way, I still struggle with this one as well. But those were kind of the five things that I always go back to when I, especially for first-time entrepreneurs, right? Like, again, once you've done it once, then you kind of know what to apply and what not to apply, even though you might struggle here and there. But you kind of know, you know, the basics. But for first-time entrepreneurs, I think this needs to be top of mind very much from the beginning.
That's so good. I love it. Hey there. I promised to get you back into the episode really soon, but I wanted to share a special message with you today. So maybe you're feeling like you've let yourself or others down because your business isn't performing like it has before, or you think it should be right now. I want you to know that you, my friend, are not alone. So many of my clients are feeling this way as well, but the clients who are still feeling proud of their businesses have two things in common. They've continued to make progress towards their goal, and their business is still profitable. So even if they aren't exactly where they wish they were, they are still proud because of these two things. I'm on a mission to help entrepreneurs build a profitable and productive business. And if you're looking to do this, I would absolutely love to support you. You can find all of the available options on my website at amandamckinney.com/work with me. But if you still aren't sure what option is best for you, or you just want to have a conversation, send me an email or a direct message on Instagram with the word support, and we can have a chat and see what will fit your needs the best. Okay, let's get back into the episode. So I'm going to recap the five, and then we'll go through each one a little bit deeper. So one was focusing on vanity metrics. Two, spending money before you're making money. Three is staying in your comfort zone. Four is attaching your personal identity to the business. And five is fear of missing out. So let's take a little bit of a deep dive into each of them just really quickly so people understand how to avoid it, because we all make the mistake almost by natural falling into it. So how do we look for it and really catch it so that we don't continue to make it? So vanity metrics is at the top, but not really in an order.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, vanity metrics, it means a lot of things to a lot of people. But to me, the key metric that I ask any entrepreneur, whether I invest in them or not, you know, or they're going through a program, is at the end of the day, revenue and cash flows are going to be queen. Right. So if when you're giving me an investor report and you're telling me that you were, you know, given all of this awards and or had this many likes on social media or your content went viral, that's fantastic. I'm happy for you. But I don't know nothing about the health of your business. So to me, you know, focusing on the real metrics, that's going to be revenue, cash flows, burn, churn. You know, how many customers are you acquiring? How many customers are you retaining? Those are key core metrics that actually tell me how your business is performing, right? Everything else, I may be super happy and they might be tied to brand awareness or brand equity, whatever. But at the end of the day, they really don't tell me how your company's doing. And I think first-time entrepreneurs, we fall victim of this, right? Fortunately and unfortunately, because I love entrepreneurs, but I also think that on mainstream media and social media, we also romanticize with the concept of being an entrepreneur, particularly if you're a venture-backed entrepreneur. And then we start, you know, and then you see how these entrepreneurs were on, you know, Forbes 30 under 30 or right, whatever list, you will. And so you think of entrepreneurship as that, right? And it's not. I mean, it's a hustle and it's a everyday grind. And, you know, most of the time you're not going to get the stories. You're not going to be on this list. And again, it tells us nothing about the health of your business. Same thing with social media, right? Like I talk to a lot of, especially if you're a direct-to-consumer business, it's easy to post content to try to get brand awareness or try to, you know, get your product or service out there. But if you're not getting the likes, it's easy to feel down and stuff. But I always say, okay, but did any, even if they didn't like it, did they convert? Did they go to your website? Did they, you know, I care more about conversion rates rather than who liked that one post or that one, you know, reel that you did. So that's what I mean by vanity metrics. And I think, again, I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying, I think we all fall victim to, especially when we're first-time entrepreneurs.
Absolutely. I appreciate it. And I hope everyone hits pause, rewind, and listens to that again, because it's so easy to fall into this. I do it. Everyone does it. It's super easy. What I have started to say to my clients or say to myself as well is any metric that someone else can see is most likely a vanity metric. Not 100% here. I'm not saying there's nothing, but like when people can see how many people like an Instagram post or a social media post or comment on something, that to me is a vanity metric, but no one knows how many subscribers I have on my email list or the revenue that's coming in or the expenses that are going out. That's like a private number that myself, my business coaches, that anyone in the business on the back end knows. And so it's not a vanity metric because it's behind closed doors. And so I've really kind of looked at it like that, and I've tried to catch myself if I am focused on the number of followers or the whatever. I really try and go back to what you're talking about, which is the numbers that no one can see. And I try to look at percentages of conversions. Like, I'm so glad you said that. Every client of mine is like, that's why Amanda has been honing in on that so much, because it's the percentage. If you convert 50%, even if it's one person out of two, it's still 50% that you converted. That's a huge number.
100%. And I'm going to steal that from you now. It's the numbers that nobody else can see, because that's so true, right? And again, if you focus on those vanity metrics, you're constantly going to be comparing yourself to somebody else. It's going to make you feel bad. It's going to affect your performance. And it's just not helpful overall as you continue to grow and enhance your business model.
Right. It can take over a whole day if you're not careful. I mean, it can really derail some things, yeah, because you can get in your head about it, for sure. At least I can. I shouldn't talk about anybody else. I'm just talking about myself and things I see from my clients, for sure. But thank you for bringing that one up. I think it's a big one. So the next one is spending money before making money. And I think this is a really good one. And in your Instagram reel, you said very specifically about one thing: before spending money on ads. Which I was like, oh gosh, she needs to hone in on this one on my podcast.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, especially now, because, you know, maybe when Instagram was, you know, you were an early adopter and you were using ads or TikTok, whatever, maybe it worked, right? But now it's a mature, both of them are mature outlets. And so really, to make money off of ads, you need to spend a lot of money. And if you're not making money, then what's the point, right? And you also, I also believe a lot in organic growth, particularly in the early days, because you look, that's like a huge learning curve, right? I don't think you want to be a mainstream business unless you want to be Walmart, right? Or something like that you want to appeal to everyone and all of the masses. But most businesses start with a very niche, right? Like, this is who I'm serving. They know their audience. They know where they are. They know, you know, how they like to consume, you know, content or whatever, or their products and services. So focus in on that and learn as much as you can. And I think that when you immediately start with ads, you kind of remove yourself from that learning process, because you're just paying to review, you know, for your product to be out there, but you're not really talking to early adopters about, do they like your product or service? What needs to be improved? What needs to be enhanced? What are they currently using? And that's not scalable. I admit it. It's not, you know, it's not scalable, but I think that it's key to the early stages of your company. Now, once you learn all of that and you really zone in on what your, you know, value proposition is and kind of what you bring to the table, and you have product market fit, sure, you know, and you have revenue coming in, then you can invest in things like ads or in things like PR. PR is another one. You know, I can't tell you how many entrepreneurs we've helped that they spent seriously over $100,000 on like PR firms to try to get on articles. Or try to get on, and PR is not a sustainable acquisition tool for customers, right? It might help you. I'm not, by the way, like saying that you shouldn't ever do ads or that you should never do PR.
Right.
But I think that you need to know when and why, right? If you want to be on that article and you want an article out there, why? Is it to attract new customers? Is it because you're starting to hire and you want, you know, potential employees to know that your company's solid and you want them to maybe apply? Like, you really need to have a goal and not just look at PR as an acquisition tool. So those are, you know, and I'll just say one that I think we all do, and that is we spend on swag. If you're a first-time entrepreneur, you get so excited about launching your business and, you know, I have my business and I have my website, and now I'm going to do swag. By the way, I have like a swag.
I love it. I want one. Now I'm like, oh, I want one.
That's great. We're making money now. But at the beginning, it's very easy. That's a vanity metric, right? Because who's going to want to wear your brand when nobody even knows what your brand is?
Right.
And sometimes I've seen entrepreneur, maybe not hundreds of thousands of dollars, but you know, to me, at the earliest stages of your company, do you really need swag?
I don't know. The answer is no, because I have about 1,000 pins sitting in a drawer over here that are still sitting in a drawer from the first podcast name that is now no longer. And I'll just be using these pins until they dwindle away. It's funny how we all do that. And I say that because I want everyone to know it's so easy to fall into that. I mean, I went to one trade show and I'm like, I got to buy all the things to give away. And now I have 1,000 pins sitting in a drawer. So we all do it.
Yeah.
We can laugh about it, but I can tell you, I wish I would have spent that money on something else.
Yeah.
So there's that. So thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate it. And I like that you're saying, like, it's not that you're saying not to do these things. It's to know why and when. And I think that's the most critical part. And, you know, we need to have a lot of tools in our toolbox as entrepreneurs. And so PR and ads and all those things are just a tool. We just, like you said, need to know when and why we're using them. And what I think, my perception as a coach who's worked with so many people who are starting, and they say, oh man, I'm gonna run some ads. And I basically beg them not to at the beginning. And the reason why, and I tell them every time, is like, I want you to understand, which is what you're talking about, of like, understand how to convert someone in a warm audience first, which is someone who knows you, likes you, and trusts you already, because converting a cold audience in an ad is hard, really hard to do. And you're going to spend money to learn that lesson. And so unless you're willing to spend $100 a day, at least at a minimum, and that's like the minimum, I would say.
Yeah.
I'm not an ads expert, but it's really getting that into that idea of like, gosh, you don't have to start there. You can start with something that's not scalable and then later scale so much quicker with ads. So good. Okay. Number three is the comfort zone. This one I'm really interested in. So how can we recognize and avoid this one?
Yeah. So I think that, you know, I've talked to entrepreneurs that are just starting out, and I've talked to entrepreneurs that are now, you know, in their growth trajectory. And I've talked to, you know, I was in corporate America in private equity. I was actually, part of my job was to work with portfolio companies. These are multi-million dollar companies already. Private equity is like latter stage investment. So you're taking ownership, control ownership of the company. So completely different than startups, right? And so, and my job was to work with those CEOs to try to get alignment so that they can hit the growth metrics that we have projected for them. And so I work with, you know, first-time entrepreneurs, early startups, growth companies, and then mature companies. And I would say that everybody, we all do it. We all think, oh, if I just solve this problem, right? If you're early stage, if I just raise my seed round or my angel round, then all my problems are going to go away. Or if you are, you know, in the growth stage, oh, if I just hire these core people and build up my bench, you know, I'm going to be okay. And all my problems are going to be away. As you mature, I think, you know, you kind of get it. But I guess the key thing here is that problems, when you're an entrepreneur, or honestly in life, problems are just part of life. Problems are just part of being a business owner. They're never going to go away. They're just going to evolve to other type of problems, right?
Right.
Even in corporate, like even when you're a mature company, now you have to say, how do I think back like a startup, right?
Right.
So that I don't just become this giant red tape organization that's no longer innovative. So like problems just evolve to other problems and they never go away. So the more you feel comfortable being uncomfortable, it's, you know, as early as you can, I think you're going to be better served. If you start feeling like you're comfortable and you're in a good place, then you need to really take a step back, maybe talk to you as an accountability coach to say, hey, am I comfortable and still growing, or am I comfortable because I'm stuck, or I need to know how to get to the next level? Do I want to get to the next level? But always just be aware of the comfort zone. Not to say that we, you know, there are times in the life trajectory of your company that you're not going to be as pressed, you know, if you can't make payroll or whatever. I'm not saying that, you know, I also don't believe in this toxic, always be hustling culture.
Right.
But, you know, there are ways that you can identify, hey, I just need to, for me, not being in a comfort state just means I'm always growing. I'm always learning. Mm-hmm. I'm always, you know, I need a challenge. And it doesn't have to be like toxic. You know, I need to just grow as fast as I can, or I need to always be working. But in a way that you feel like you are learning, you're growing as a business, as a professional, as a leader, as an employer, as an entrepreneur. You know, that's where I think that the comfort zone can be, you know, something that actually gets in the way of you achieving that ongoing learning and ongoing growth.
I completely agree. And I think about everyone who I work with that's talking about setting goals. And whenever someone is working on a goal and they're like, I want to do this thing, it's pushing themselves a little bit outside of their comfort zone, which is lovely. What we have to do is recognize, do you have the capacity and the willingness? We got to make sure those are in check before you set that goal, because otherwise you can't reach that goal. But I love that idea of pushing a little bit further and getting out of that comfort zone. But I very specifically love that you said, do I want to go to the next level? That was such a fantastic question, because so often we just go because we are that driven person that feels like that's the next step. I got to do it. But slowing down enough, taking us back to what we were talking about earlier and asking ourselves, is this really what I want? Because it could be exactly what you want, but it could be not what you want. And maybe your business isn't needing to go to that next level, or you're in the wrong seat. I'm sure you see that, like, you know, CEOs get replaced all the time.
Yeah, especially founders, right? Once the company maybe has outgrown and they no longer want to be in that position. Yeah. And, you know, I actually have this conversation a lot with companies that, you know, through Stitch Crew, we support both venture-backed companies or venture-backable companies and non-venture-backable companies. And I feel like the non-venture-backable companies, or not to say that they're not venture, but they just haven't raised or they're not looking to raise. But sometimes because, you know, mainstream media always likes to focus on the venture capital-backed ones, which, by the way, it's only 1% of companies. Like, most companies never raise venture capital, right? And so you have to, the whole purpose of venture is to grow exponentially and very, very fast. So I asked that question that you just said to a lot of companies that are looking to go to the venture route and maybe are even profitable, but they feel like they're not getting the attention that other peers are just because they haven't raised private funding. I always ask, is that what you want? Is that the type of company that you want to build, you know, exponentially? Because, I mean, with venture, it's not just, you know, 2 times better, 3 times better. You have to be, you know, 10 times better than anything else that's out there. You have to do it as fast as you can. You're probably going to have to, you know, grow at a steady rate consistently. And that's not for everyone, right? And I don't think that a lot of founders take the time to say, hey, is this really what I want? If I picture my best day, right, what am I doing in the morning, in the afternoon, at night? Mm-hmm. Who am I spending it with? And what am I doing? Does that correlate with building a massive unicorn venture-backable company, you know, if you get there? Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, the entrepreneurs haven't thought about that.
Right.
Or haven't made space to think about that.
Right. We really have to think about that. It's such a powerful exercise to think, is this really what I want? And I love the question of, when I think about my day, the start, the middle, the end, where do I want to be spending my time? Because the reality is, if you go that venture capital route, or for the person who's not even thinking about that, but instead of going one step out of the comfort zone, they're like, I'm going 10. You have to think about, okay, it's going to take 10 times the effort. It's not just going to take like a little extra more. It's going to take a lot. And we have to think about, that's our time, that's our energy, and we have to know that. So the great questions. So I know we are getting close on time here. So we have 2 more. One is, or the fourth mistake is attaching personal identity to the company. And I feel like you said, we could talk about this in a whole other episode on the podcast, but What would you say? How would you identify this one? How do we catch it and avoid it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very easy to do, right? Like as entrepreneurs, you know, it's very easy to, because we're probably in the early days of launching the company, it's our baby, mm-hmm. right? It's like, it's our idea, you're nurturing, you're probably spending 24/7 on it, you right. know, doing all of the things that you need to do. You're the CEO, but you're also the, you know, whatever role you need to do. And so it's very easy to attach the success or failure to yourself as an individual. And I think it's just such a, it's something that a lot of us do. And by the way, not just entrepreneurs, you know, with Vest, I talk to a lot of women professionals that also attach the personal identity. In fact, I think you were one of our speakers at Vest. Thank you, by the way.
It was thank you for having me.
But a lot of Vest members, I always tell them when we're introducing ourselves, tell us more than just your title mm-hmm. or the company that you work for, because we want to get to know you as an individual, as a person, not just who you work for and what your role or title is, because you're more than that, right? The company's bigger than you and you're bigger than the company. And so, and it's dangerous because what happens if the company fails? You know, you're going to internalize all of those feelings and all of those emotions, which you need to go through, but you also need to recognize that it's not who it's not just core to who you are. Even if it succeeds, you know, maybe there's a time, even if the company succeeds and there's, you know, it's going well, what if you decide to retire or to remove yourself from that role to let somebody else come in? But then you really have a challenge, you know, attaching, you know, and I think we do this on a lot of ways. I'm actually a mother. My oldest daughter is now going to college. And even when we, you know, a lot of my personal identity has been attached to motherhood.
Right.
Because I live and breathe for my two girls. And now that she's gone, I'm having a challenge, like separating that, you know, protective mother figure and letting her be who she needs to be and learn on her own. So that's what I mean by attaching your identity. Figure out who you are at the core. What are your values? What moves you? What drives you? How do you want to be remembered when you're no longer here? And that needs to be bigger than the company, right? That needs to be outside of just a company, outside of just, you know, your mom title or your wife title or your spouse, whatever. Who are you as an individual?
Right. It's a tough one. I feel like we can all fall into that no matter what the role is. And this was really apparent to me the first networking event that I went to after I got laid off. And I almost didn't go in. I was sitting in my car and I realized, oh my gosh, what am I going to say when someone says, what do you do? And I vowed to myself, I'll never ask that question to anyone ever again. And I have not, because that is not who that person is. What they do and their title is not who that person is. Because I felt that so strongly when I was like, oh my gosh, I don't have a title anymore. And I was like, yes, yes, I do. I'm a whole human. And there's so much more to me than the title that was just taken away. And so I learned that lesson in a really emotional way, for sure. But I still, now that I'm an entrepreneur, I definitely can see the tie really strongly to my business, for sure. So we all have to watch out for that one. So the last one is fear of missing out. And this one's big. I feel like it can tie into so many things. So how do we watch out for this one?
You know, I'm still figuring this out for myself, you know, particularly because of the industry that I operate. It's venture capital. So a lot of, you know, this industry is literally built upon relationships and being seen. And, you know, it's a very, geez, I could talk all day about it. But, you know, most of the time, you're expected to be at events, at conferences, at, you know, talk about your investments and all of those things. And I found myself personally struggling with that. Because what happens when you do a lot of events for professional reasons is what I found out for myself is that then I was too burned out to do personal.
Oh, right. You know,
like I didn't want to see anybody because I was doing so much professionally. And so I think, you know, and honestly, if I look at things that I did because of fear of missing out, going back to vanity metrics, they really didn't add on to my core key metrics, right? And so now I try to be a lot more conscious of like, am I doing this because of fear of missing out, or does it really add value to what we're building and how we want to build? It's not just what we're building, but how you want to build intentionally. And if the answer is no, I just don't let it go, right? So I'm just more aware of what I'm doing and why I'm saying yes to things and why I'm saying no to things.
Oh, that's a big lesson. I'm taking this in. I literally was working on it this morning of a list of places, podcast and speaking events that I want to apply for. And I'm going to go and check that list hardcore before I start applying, because I bet there are several on there that I just added on there just because I felt like I wanted to.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
I mean, we all do it. It's hard. And we do want to be part of, you know, things, and we do want to challenge ourselves. But at the same time, it's, I don't know, at least for me, and we just had this session actually advanced on burnout and, you know, this constant hustle culture and the feeling of it's never enough, you know, whatever you do, it's never enough. So it's very keen for me, and it's one of my five things, right? That I'm always like, accountability, am I doing this because it's the right thing to do and because it's actually additive, or am I doing it just because it's a vanity metric, or it's fear of missing out on something.
Gosh, that's such a good check. I think we can check ourselves almost on all of them with that of, is this something that I need to be doing to hit my goal, to achieve what I want to achieve and stay close to how I want to be remembered? I really liked the how you said that earlier as well. Erica, this has been so lovely. Thank you for sharing so much. And I'm going to follow up with an email that says, how can we get you back on the schedule to do part two of this? But I know everyone's going to want to connect with you and learn more about you and how they can stay connected. So can you tell everyone where they can find you on the internet?
Yeah. So I'm always the most active, actually LinkedIn for, you know, I am pretty much on LinkedIn all the time, Instagram and Threads. I no longer have Twitter or X. But you can find me there. I respond to most DMs. Just might give me a day or two. And I always ask for grace because I do get a lot. So if I don't respond right away, just nudge me one more time. Give me the benefit of the doubt that I just missed it, and then do it again. But usually I try to respond to all.
Wonderful. I'll make sure to have all the links in the show notes. Also to Stitch Crew Invest, which are the companies you're running. And there's several more listed on the follow through.
Yeah, please. Luckily, I'm not a solo entrepreneur. I have a fantastic team. Those companies would not exist. I'm actually great. I'm taking a step back.
Look at you.
The team kind of take over everything. definitely go to www.stitchcrew.com/stitchcrew, which we provide support to entrepreneurs, particularly women and people of color. And then VEST, it's a peer network and fund for women. So you can go to www.vesther.co, so without the N, and you can get in touch with me and or the team there.
And it's a wonderful team. VEST is a wonderful group, and I can vouch for that because it was once I talked to your group and talked about accountability and all this amazing stuff at the end of 2023, I walked out of this office and told my husband, Michael, that was the most engaged group I have ever been a part of. And it was, so it says everything about your members. It says everything about you, how you're leading that team, your whole team that's leading them. And it was so fun to interact. So I highly recommend the group for sure. Thank you so much, Erica, for being here today.
Thank you, Amanda.
Erica had so many nuggets of wisdom. Not only did she share those five mistakes to look out for, but I loved how our conversation actually started with how we all start as an accidental entrepreneur and really think about that time freedom and flexibility. And I have no doubt that you were thinking about that dream of what you want your daily life to look like and how your business can help you achieve it if it doesn't take over your life. Erica's honesty about her experience, as well as how she's worked with others, was so inspiring, and I cannot wait to share next week's episode with you about how to know when it's time to shut a business down and exploring the idea of how we tie our personal identity to our businesses, because it's a great next conversation after looking at these mistakes to avoid in our business. But your next step after listening to this episode is actually to go through that list of five mistakes and commit to catching yourself when you fall into one or even multiple of these traps. And I want you to think about the one or two that likely jumped out more for you, because they're always going to be different. And whatever season you're in, there might be one or two that really caught your attention. And I want you to notice that and then make sure to really pay close attention to those specific ones. And remember, don't be mad at yourself if you fall into the mistake, because we all do. But rather, knowing that you can catch it quickly, you're less likely to be impacted in the long term. So you're doing great. Just catch it and move on. And be sure to stay tuned to next week's episode with Erica too. So until next time, give yourself permission to make mistakes and learn from them, and grace along the way. I'll talk to you soon. Thank you for listening to this episode. If you found it helpful or inspiring, be sure to share it with someone else who could use it too. Sharing is caring, but it's also a huge boost to your accountability. Sharing this message and then talking about it will ensure that you actually take the action that was mentioned in this episode. Hello, accountability. There's nothing better than the feeling of actually following through, and I want that for you. So screenshot it, share it, and if you share it on Instagram, be sure to tag me at @TheAmandaMcKinney too. Until next time.